Okay, we start in the bottom of Kuf Chazayim Amud Bet, second to last line. Here, there's a series of statements that are Shalach Le Rabbi Avad of Yosef Bar Chama. So we're going to have a number of them. Only one of them is related to our Masechta over here, but the Gemara is going to bring the whole series together. So we're going to go through a lot of halachot that are not necessarily related to what we've been learning till now. So Shalach Le Rabbi Avad of Yosef Bar Chama. So he sent him this. Ha'omer Chavero Adigan Avto. He says to his friend, listen, you stole my Eved. He says, I didn't steal. So, Mativu Etzlecha. So, what's he doing over there? If you didn't steal him, how'd you get him? He says, Atamachartali. You sold him to me. Atana Tatali Bamatana, or you gave him to me as a gift. So then he says to him, listen, Ritzoncha Hashbea Vitul. Hishaba Vitul. Vinishba. So now he says, listen, if, you know, listen, I'll make you a deal. If you really think he's yours and that I took him inappropriately, take a shvua to that effect, that he's yours, and you'll take him. And sure enough, the claimant goes ahead and makes a shvua. Eino yachol lachzor bo. He can't back out of this. So when I says, my kamashmalan, what's the chiddush here? We know this already. Tanino, we learned it in a Mishnah. Amarlo neman alai abba, neman alai avicha. So here we're talking about a beis din or some sort of adjudication that they want to go through. And a father or is pasul because of being a karov in terms of being a dayan. Nevertheless, he says, despite that fact, I accept his neman to me, and I accept whatever his decision is. Or nemanim alai shlosha roei bakar. Or takes three individuals who are not bikiyim in the dinim or in halacha. We say, these three people will adjudicate the case. We agree to this. So Rabbi Meir Omer Yachol Achzor Bo. Rabbi Meir says you can back out of it. It's not binding. Chamim Omer Men Yachol Achzor Bo. Chamim said that you can't back out. Once you've agreed to such a decision process, that type of arbitration you want to call it, you can't walk away from it. So when it says, HaKamash Vilan, Be'etein Lecha Machloket, that the answer is, the Chiddush of Rabbi Ava over here, is that the machlokas between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim is in a case of etein lecha, when I will give it to you. Va'alocha, and the locha is like divrei Chachamim. So that happens to be this statement that we're just talking about here. It happens to be a subject of machlokas about where do the Chachamim and Rabbi Meir argue. If there are two possibilities of who's the acceptant or who's the person that is agreeing to this position over here. So, for instance, in our case, the case is that he says to the toveya, the claimant, he says, listen, you take a shvua and you can take it, you can keep it, right? On the other hand, based on that, what happens if it's the one who says, the claimant or the toveya says to the defendant, you take a shvua via patur, and that you'll be patur. So what would be the case? Does it matter who is taking the shvua or who is agreeing over here? So that's actually subject to a machlokas. You can see this in the Rashbam. The Rashbam says, and the last, it's the widest lines in the Rashbam. The first widest lines in the Rashbam, towards the end, it says, Vakosha came. It says, Vakosha came, Heicha dekamar tovea neman alai abba vavicha. So it's, if the claimant says, over here we're talking about the defendant, if the claimant says, She'im yiftarchuva macholucha, they say, you're patur, no problem. Dekulma alma bolde. Everybody agrees, Afir Meir, Daniel Cholak Zorbo, that you can't back out of it. So in our case here, the case where Neman Alei Avicha or Neman Alei Abba is a case where the defendant is saying about the Toveya that is believed, they are believed and I accept whatever they say. But then, what about in a case where the Toveya, right, the claimant himself says that I believe and if they say you're okay, then it's fine. Then there, everybody agrees, even Rabbi Meir would agree that it works there. Why? Shari Mukhzav Va'omid, right, he is the one who already has it in his possession. Umechila Dilach Kikinyan Dami. And the other person just forgiving whatever his claim is. So there's a difference between when you want to take an item away and move it from where it's Mukhzak and change the possession. So when you want to change the possession, that's where Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim argue. Whether you can agree to have this type of arbitration, change the ownership. On the other hand, even Rabbi Meir agrees, where it's a case of a case where the Toveya, the claimant, is agreeing to this type of arbitration, and all he has to do is, if it's patur, he forgives, mechila. In that case, he's not changing where the item is, he's simply reneging or giving up his rights foregoing his rights to make a claim here. And that mechila is clearly a kinyan. That's not a problem over here. Then the Rashbam explains, v'ikal man damar. There's another position in the Gemara that ha'atam b'machulucha machloket. That the whole machloket is in a case where he says it's forgiven if they paskin in your favor. But even the chachamim will agree when I say etain lecha, I will give it to you. In that case, everybody agrees that you can be chozer because there's no kinyan, there's no form, right? There's no form of action that's been taken here that makes it binding. So the question is, where does everybody agree? Right, the way it's laid out in our Gemara, the disagreement is v'etein lecha. When I say I will give it to you, when I will give it to you, the Chum says that's binding. Rav Meir says that's not binding. On the other hand, in the case where I say it's forgiven, in this case, that's binding because the mechila itself can generate the kinyan. Whereas the other opinion is the other way around, which is that by mechila, that's where they have the machlokas, but by etein lecha, everybody agrees there's no kinyan, there's no form of kinyan there. So the Rabbi Abba comes to teach us which way to set up the machlokas. Set up the machlokas by etein lecha. That the case is, the machlokas etein lecha, by forgiving, by mechila, everybody agrees that that's a good kinyan, and you can't back out of it. Where do they argue? Is it etein lecha? Then, besides that, he says, hashbeah betul, that's the other situation. Hashbeah betul, is Hilka Chitzchuk Rabbi Abba Lishminon de Betein Lecha Pligi, number one. Vechalacha Kedivre Chachamim, not because like the Chachamim, de Avagav de Mistabra time of the Rabbi Meir. Even though Rabbi Meir's explanation makes sense that there's a lack of Kenyan here, nevertheless, the Loch is like the Chachamim, that when you say Betein Lecha, or you say Hashbeah Betul, that's enough to bind you in the situation. But it's only binding when there's a complete Ergemar Din. It's not binding until there's a conclusion. So, for instance, in our case over here, if you see in Rabbi Abba, he says, "V'tzoncha eshava betul v'nishba." The case is binding because of v'nishba, because he took the shvua. When he takes the shvua, you can't back out of it anymore. You can't say, "Oh, no, I really didn't mean. I was joking." No, but before he takes the shvua, you have a right to back out of it, because it's only once there's a gemar din do we say that you're locked into this psak or you're locked into this decision. So that would be the same again by the case of the Neman Alayaba, Neman Alavicha. You can back out of it unless they come to a conclusion. If they come to a conclusion, then you can't back out of it anymore. Alright, next case. Sholach le Rabbi Abba le Rabbi Yosef Barchamu. So Rabbi Abba sends to Rabbi Yosef Barchamu, Alocha govim min avadim. Alocha is that you can collect out of avadim. For instance, in a case where a debtor passes away, and then the creditors want to come and collect from the Yatomim, they can collect out of, we know, out of real property. Real property meaning karka. They can collect out of karka because he has a shibud on the karka prior to the death of the debtor. Since he has a shibud on the karka, he can go to the yitomim, and it's not taking out of the possessions of metalton of the yitomim. That's fine. But what about avadim? Avadim, we know, are hupshu the karkaot, right? Or compared to karkaot. They have the same din as karkaot, but not completely. So how close are they to karka? How close are they to real property? Why? Because in one sense, they're like karka, because you can have a kinyan on them with kesef, shtar, chazakah. There's certain functions or certain ways that they act just like real property, and you don't take a shavua on them. But the other hand, right, and they don't have ona, the other hand, there's a tzayit of avadim, which is not like karka. Karka doesn't move. So the reason that when a creditor relies on payment from land or from real property is because it's stationary, it won't disappear. That's not true of midah d'nayit. That's not true of items that move or that are not stationary. Right here, they're mobile. If they're mobile, then how can he rely on the avadim? They could disappear, they could be sold, they could be run away. He may not rely on them. So the halacha here is, halacha govim min avadim. That's Rav's position. Rav Nachman Amar, ain govim. Nachman says, you do not collect that avadim. It's true when it comes to dinei, the rice, the things that are written in the Torah, that an eved has a din like real property, kesef, shtar, chazok, ono, shvua, but not when it comes to collections for a creditor. Okay, next case. Shalach le Rabbi Abba Rabbi Yosef Barchamo. Halacha shlishi b'sheni kasher. Here we're talking about edut. How close or how distant a relative do you have to be in order to make you invalid as an aid or to testify in a case? So Rabbi Abba comes and says that Shlishi Bisheni, this is basically a first cousin once removed. Shlishi means, for instance, Ruvain, right, who has a son, I don't know, you call him Chanoch, you want to call him Chetron, whatever his son is, and then he has a grandson. So in that case where he has a grandson, that's called a shlishi. Reuven is the Rishon, right? His son, in that case, is the Sheni. And then his grandson will be the shlishi. His brother Shimon will also be classified as a, right, as a Rishon. And then Shimon's son will be classified as a Sheni. So now when I say a Sheni b'shlishi, what I'm saying that is a second generation can testify for a third generation, that means that I am saying that Shimon's son can testify for Reuven's grandson. Right? Shimon's son can testify for Reuven's grandson. What does that make them?
First
cousins once removed. Exactly. So first cousins once removed can go ahead and testify for each other. That's the key here. So if Reuven, maybe let's pick, I don't know, Palu, which is one of his sons, he has a grandson named Eliav, right? So Eliav can testify for Yimuel, who's the son of Shimon. So that's the case here. First cousins once removed can testify. Rava says, Aparishon. Not only can a third generation testify to a second generation, a third generation can each testify to the first generation, which means that in this case, the grandson of Reuven can testify for Shimon himself. Not just for Shimon's son, but even for Shimon himself. So I make it for your great uncle. A great, right? A great nephew can testify for their great uncle in this case.
That's further away, so why shouldn't you be able to?
Right, that would be Rava's claim. It's not further away. Truthfully, you are closer in blood relationship, right? Your great uncle is closer to you than your first cousin once removed. I mean, age wise, you're closer, but in terms of blood relationship, you're closer, right? Great uncle, right? Right. So, but that's, I would say, yeah, right. Age wise, you might have more relevance to each other, but in terms of real blood line, the great uncle would be closer than a first cousin once removed. So now, Marba Ravashi. It's interesting that Marba Ravashi says you can even testify for a Abba da Abba, right? You can even testify for a grandfather. The loch is not like Ravashi, that you can testify for your grandfather. And the Rashbam lays it out like this. He says, D'b'nei banim, uv'nei b'nei banim. When it comes to grandchildren and great-grandchildren, ad elef dorot, to 1,000 generations, lo ya'idu avotayem. You can never testify along that line. Why? The ben yerech avivu. Because the child is always an extension of the father. So the child is always an extension of the father. There will be an unlimited range. But any time a child has his father, then each child is the father's extension. And therefore, no matter how many generations you go down, whichever great-great-great-great-grandchild you're talking about, he's an extension of the great-great-great-great-grandfather. So you can never testify. That's the Rashbam's claim. The Ri over here says, Tosel says, that he doesn't think that's right. He says, it depends how far away it is. He says that the Rashbam says that it's Elav Dorot. He says, that's not true. He says, Enir Lari, Kevin Titpal Gadara Kokach. Once you reach a certain distance, the relationship is lost. So he says, even though in general you would say, maybe grandfather, he doesn't give a definition of how far. Maybe grandfather is the end, maybe great-grandfather, Ray, you could testify. Or great-great-grandfather, whatever it is, where there's a certain amount of distance that would allow you to be not considered a relative. That's what the Ri claims, as opposed to the Rashbam, who says that it's a unlimited scope of father to child where you cannot testify. Right now, the next case of Rabbi Abba. Sholach le Rabbi Abba le Rabbi Yosef bar Chama. Hayodea lo be'edut karka. Right, he knew some testimony about a field. Achlo nistama, before he became blind. He knew where the borders of the property were, but then he became blind after he had known that information. Right, so now, if this case, bin nistama, then he becomes blind, pasul. He may not testify in this case. Ushmul amar kasher. Shmuel says it's fine. So the problem is that when he comes to testify, he can no longer identify by sight the location of the borders. So if he can't identify by sight the location of the borders, how can we trust him? Now he did see where they were prior to becoming blind, but now when he comes to testify and identify for us where the borders are, he's already blind. So there, Rabbi Abba says, Pasul, because what's he going to do in this case? Shmuel says, Kasher, why? Eshud Mekavein Matzrano. He can do it based on he can say, there's this field on the right, there's this demarcation, there's this fence, there's these rocks. There are ways that he can remember exactly where the field ends without having to actually go physically and show them where the field ends. I mean, obviously this will be unique to certain cases. Not every case can he do this, but there will be instances where he could testify about the borders without having to physically go and see and identify for them the borders. About glimalo, when it comes to a jacket, in that case, certainly he can't identify it, because even if he tells us what the jacket looks like, there are a lot of jackets that look like that. That's not the enough information. Rav Sheshi the Marafilu Glima can even testify about a jacket, because Efshar the Mekavein Midarta Kol Miglach Rachbo, he can tell you what the width and length of the jacket are. He tells you what the width and length of the jacket, the measurements of the jacket, that's information that's useful. Even though he can't see it, he can tell you, yes, that's the jacket, because it was this by this midot.
This is also in the case where he saw it before.
Yes, as we obviously that he saw originally the edut. But when it comes to metal, any type of metal, gold, silver, there's no identifying factors. So there he can't say or testify that it belongs to this individual. He says even metals, why? He can know the weight. He can tell you, look, there's 5 ounces of gold. Or it's a block that is 5 ounces, a rectangular block that's 5 ounces. He can give you some identifying factors. So each one is giving him more and more room to testify with information that is more and more questionable because it's less and less unique to the item. When you talk about weight and of a gold bar is not necessarily unique to this gold bar. It could be applicable to all gold bars. True, it's pretty amazing that he knows the weight of this bar and that might be enough, but maybe there's some sort of standard weight and all bars are that weight and therefore maybe it's not an identifying factor. Same thing comes with a glima. When it comes to a coat, there are numerous coats that are that size. Not all, right, all coats that they make, I mean, today it's even more so this way, that coats or jackets are made in a standard sizes, that even if he says a size, that doesn't mean necessarily that it belongs to this individual. There could be numerous coats with that size. In their day, it's probably a lot more identifying that the size of the coat, because each one was made, right, uniquely for a situation or a standard. They weren't really standards by which coats were made. But there's still the factor that it could be that there are multiple people with this size coat. Doesn't mean that it's his. And the same thing, we go back with the borders. With the borders, if he can't see it, maybe what he's saying is moved, the rocks have moved, something's changed in the layout. How do we know that he's testifying about the same borders that he saw before he became blind? So each one of them is giving more and more power to the person who's become blind to testify, but it's more and more questionable the evidence that he's testifying about because the evidence could be shared by multiple items. Meitve, we have a problem. Aya yodea lo be'edut ad shelo sechatano before he became his son-in-law. Pikeach, he was of sound mind, v'nitcharish, and then he became, here nitcharish can mean that he became a deaf or mute. When the Gemara talks nitcharish, it means he's deaf and mute. The Rashbam entertains the possibility that this is a unique case over here because of the need by Edut to have mipiham, velo mipiktavam, that he has to speak, and when he's nitcharesh means deaf and mute, and therefore he can no longer testify. The Rashbam doesn't like that explanation because he says that's obvious that he's pasul because he can't testify. There's nothing to talk about over here. He thinks nitcharesh is where the Torah equates everywhere else, or the Gemara equates everywhere else, that a cheresh is the same as shoteh, that the equation here is cheresh and shoteh, and therefore when he's deaf and mute, the assumption is that he is not of sound mind. Right, so that's or is unable to testify here. So, Bikeach and Nitcharesh, Piteach Vinistama, he was able to see and he became blind. Shafui, over here, is clearly of sound mind. Vinishtaten, he went, right, crazy, he lost his mind. Pasul, in all these cases, he's Pasul to testify.
So, how would you say that?
So that's what the Rishbam says. The Rishbam says in those two are the same type, they're same problem. It's the same problem in the end. The Nitcharesh and Nishtateh in the end become the same problem. All right, I think you could see nuances, differences in this. Nitcharesh is that he's just not capable, meaning that he hasn't got the capacity anymore to do it, whereas Shoteh means that he's lost his mind, meaning that it could be that different types of psulim here, right, or right, degrees of the problem. So now the Gemara is, this is not the question. The question is from this part of the Braisa. Aval yodea lo be'edut ad shelo naseh chatano. He didn't know testimony before he became his. He knew edut before he became his son-in-law. Benaseh chatano, and then he becomes his son-in-law. Umeita bito, and then the daughter, the one who connected them, right? He's married to his daughter. Dies. Pikeach benitcharish v'chazer benitpakeach. Right? He was fine, sound mind, nitcharesh, and then he lost the ability to be discerning, and then he went again and became nitpakeach, he was of sound mind again. Or pitach, he was had vision, v'nistamai, he became blind, v'chazar v'nitpateach, and then he was of clear vision again. Shafoi, he was of sound mind, v'nishtateh, he lost his mind, v'chazar v'nishtafeh, and then again he was of sound mind. Kasher, all these cases, he's kasher. So this is just like our case. Our case was when he was clear vision, he saw something. V'nistamai, and then later on he became blind. Right, and then over here, once he becomes right of clear vision again, he can testify. Zaklal, this is the principle. Kol shetchilato osofo bipaslut pasul. If there's a beginning or an end where he's pasul, meaning that he wouldn't have been kasher leedut, he couldn't see the edut, he couldn't testify about something in this condition, then he's pasul. Tchilato osofo bekashrut kasher. Beginning and end bekashrut is kasher. So this is a problem for everyone, right? It says tiyufta dekulu tiyufta. That's a question that everybody except for Rabbi Avo. Rabbi Avo says that he's pasul in all these cases. That's exactly what this Braisa says. The Braisa says that he can't testify. So it's over here, he can't testify because he's not of, right? He's not a kasher le'edut when he's coming to testify in court. That's what it is. He's nistama. Nistama. And yet all these Amoraim are suggesting that he could testify, right? Shmuel says he could testify karka. Rav Sheshi said he could testify to glima. Rav Papa says he could testify nascha. But that's against this Braisa. The Braisa here says that if he's not kosher le'edut, when he's come to testify, he's not a kosher eid. So that's what it says. Tiyufta dekulu, tiyufta. It's a question of all of them, except of course Rabbi Avu, who says exactly that, that he's pasul le'edut. So that's like this Braisa. Alright, next case of Rabbi Avu. Shalach Rabbi Avu, Rabbi Yosef Barchama, Umer al Tinok ben Abanim Neman. So this is the case, or maybe the case that we're after here. Person who says on a child amongst the brothers that he's a child, Ne'aman. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, Eino Ne'aman. Rabbi Yochanan says that he's not believed over here. So now, what's the case? My Kamar. What is the case over here? Amar Bayochi Kamar. Homer al Tinok ben Abanim Yirash. He says amongst one of the children that he should inherit. He's saying that this young child, he'll inherit all my possessions. Right? He'll take all my possessions. Ne'aman, he's believed, like whom? We're going to have this in 2 days. Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, this is Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, who says that if you give over, you bequeath your what you have, your possessions, to someone who is entitled to inherit you in the Torah, it's a good gift. Meaning that you can do it. Even Derech Yusha, you can circumvent the laws of the Torah, as long as you direct it to someone who otherwise would have inherited you. So here, one of the children would have been one of the Mechalkim here. He would have been one of the dividers of the estate. Therefore, if he gives it here in a Lashon Yusha to this individual, it's not even a gift, he's saying that you inherit it, it works. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, Eino Ne'aman.
Is one of his own children?
Children, right. He's one of his own children. This one child will inherit. Because it's a young child, I don't know, his favorite, youngest child, whatever it is that is going. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, Eino Ne'aman. Rabbi Yochanan says, Kerabanon, who disagree with Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka, and I'll be Mavir Yusha, even when it comes to someone who would have otherwise inherited. Atkivla Rovo, Hai Ne'aman, Ve'eino Ne'aman, Yirash, V'lo Yirash, Mibayle. The machlokas between Rabbi Avu and Rabbi Yochanan is whether he's believed or not believed. Here, believability is not the issue. The question is whether simply do you inherit or do you not inherit. The context or the language used to describe their machlokas doesn't seem relevant to what they're speaking about. The case they're speaking about is a question of whether it works or doesn't work, and you're telling me whether he's believed or not believed. Believability is not the issue over here. Of course he's believed. The question is whether, right, it works, it functions or not functioning. So you're using the wrong lashon. This is the machlokas, and this is why it's relevant to our Gemara here, why we brought all this stuff. Haomer al-tinok ben abanim b'chorhu, Ne'aman k'Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Abba says that if you say about one child that he is a b'chor, you are Ne'aman to say that he's b'chor like Rabbi Yehuda. That means that even if someone else, even if another individual is muhzak, another one of the children was muhzak as the b'chor, the father comes and says that's not the b'chor, the other one's the b'chor, he is Ne'aman like Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, Eino Ne'aman, Kerabanan. Rabbi Yochanan says, no, he's not believed, because once you have a chazakah, that one of the children is a b'chor, the father does not have the right, to identify the b'chor. Now clearly, if the father says nothing, then everybody agrees that whoever has the chazakah is the bechor will get the bechorah. It's only here where the father's coming to upend what we know as who's mukzak is the bechor. Rabbanan say he cannot upend that chazakah. He doesn't have a right to overturn the chazakah. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda says he does have a right to overturn the chazakah. And also in the other case where nobody knows who the bechor is, the father has the right, right, Yakir, to identify who the bechor is in a case where nobody knows who the bechor is. Now, Shalach Rei Ba'ava, the Rabbi Yosef Bachama, another case. Omer titol ishti ke'echad min abanim. My wife should inherit along with the children. She'll be an inheritor just like the other children. Notelet ke'echad min abanim. It works. And she becomes a divider of the estate. Meaning that she'll be equally dividing the estate amongst the children. So Amar Rava, Rava qualifies this and says, Ubin yechasim shel achshav. This only applies to the estate at this time. I mean, when the husband says it, he can do it at that moment of time, but not anything that is acquired to the estate after that point in time, that will not work. Why? Because that's davar shelo bali olam. Right? These are objects that are not in the world yet, so you can't make a kinyan on them, and therefore you can't grant that right, right, after this, from this point forward. But nevertheless, when it comes to dividing the property, how many brothers are classified here? What happens if they have children after this declaration? So those children will count in the division. So he had five children before, five children after the declaration. The property will divide into 10 or 11 parts, 10 for the children and one for her. But it will only relate for her, for the woman, it will only relate to the property that was in the estate, right, from that moment where he made the statement. So that's the two issues, or what Rava is qualifying over here is one, that you can't do this. I mean, it has to be a case where you have a Shechem Meirah, or a Bairi that does it on Yidei Kinyan. And it only applies to these, because even Rabbi Meir, who says that you can be Makne Dabar Shalom Bali Olam, right, that's only when you specifically state you're being Makne at something that's not Bali Olam. But over here, he's not making a clear statement that what comes in the future will also be included in this. And therefore, we assume that he's not being Makne Dabar Shalom Bali Olam. Only that which is in his possession right now, does he have the right to distribute. Okay, next case of Rabbi Avu. Shalakle Rabbi Abel Rabbi Yosef Bar Chama Motzei Shtar Chov Al Chaveiro. Person takes out a debt document on his friend, and he says, you know, pay me. Malve Omer Lo Nifreti. The Malve says, I was never paid. Right? Or Lo Nifreti. Klom. Love Omer Parati Mechza. Love, the debtor says, I paid half. So you have a creditor saying, I got nothing, and the debtor says, I paid half. And then all of a sudden, Eidim show up. Edim show up, Edim should paral kulo. Edim come and testify, say he gave everything. And he paid the whole debt off. So now what's the din? Arizen nishba, v'gove mechsa min echasim b'nei chorim. Rabbi Yair, he takes a shvu'ah. Question, who does two takes the shvu'ah over here? Alright, so that's a subject to a machlokas over here, we'll see in a second. Someone takes a shvu'ah, and then the remaining half that was not paid, or supposedly not paid by the admission of the debtor, gets paid, but it can only paid out of nechasim b'nei chorim, unencumbered property, v'mishubdarim lo. But when it comes to encumbered property, you can't pay it. Now that's damre, because any one of the buyers who has property that the lien is reliant on can say, listen, anu, ayedim samchinan. We believe the edim. We believe the edim who say that it was all paid off. So we're going to trust the Eidim. The Eidim say it's paid off. There's no way you can come and collect our property over here because we believe the Eidim. But why does the debtor have to pay the other half? The debtor has to pay a half because what do we have? If hodat baldin. When you admit something, it's better than any other edut. He admitted he only paid half. That means that he's also admitting that he didn't pay the other half. And his hodah is worth more than any testimony of the Eidim. So his testimony is going to be considered or have consideration more than the Eidim. Therefore, he'll have to pay it. Who takes the shvuah over here? The Rashbam claims the shvuah is alovesh para vipater min l'shalem mechza. Is that the debtor takes the shvuah to clear himself of the half that he said I paid already. He has to take a shvuah that I paid half, and then he takes that shvuah that he has to pay the half. And the other half he'll pay out of free and clear property, unencumbered property. On the other hand, the Rabbeinu Gershom says over here, from the flow of the Gemara, it sounds like, if you read the Lashon, says, Nishba, Harizen Nishba, Vigoveh. He takes the Shvuah and collects. Who would take a Shvuah to collect? That is the creditor. So that's what the Rabbeinu Gershom says. The Rabbeinu Gershom says, Hilkach Aminu Ocha Nishba Hamalveh, Vigoveh Mimechsa Shekofer Lo. Ohil Votzila Lav Shtar. Because he has the Shtar over here. The Shtar is his evidence. So he has a Shtar against the Edim. So he has a Shtar against the Edim, and the the debtor gave him some power by saying, listen, I owe you, still owe you half. All he has to do is say, I'm taking a shuwa that I wasn't paid the whole amount, that I'm owed at least half, and he'll take out a shtar, and that'll be his identification, or his evidence that he gets paid. So the shuwa here, according to Rabbi Gershom, is yidei ha-malveh, by the creditor. So Rabbi Gershom says it's for the loveh, for the debtor. Right, so now, the Mara says, v'afilu the Rabbi Akiva, even according to Rabbi Kiva, who says, "Damar Meshiva Veda Habi," that's only when there's no edim. He's afraid. So, what is this? This is a case we had in Baba Metzia. Case in Baba Metzia, you have a contract that's written in it that the debtor says in there, the debtor is obligated to pay the creditor slaim, monies in the plural. So now they come to court. The creditor claims he owes me five. And the debtor claims he owes me, I owe him three. So now what's the case? The contract states monies in plural. When you say monies in plural, what's the minimum amount in a plural is two. So Rabbi Akiva says when the debtor comes along and says that I owe you three, then guess what? You're lucky that he said three. Your contract would only entitle you to two because it's in the plural, monies. Monies just means more than one. So that could be enough, two would be sufficient. The fact that he now comes along and tells you three, that's already what you call Meshiva Veda. He's giving you more than you deserve. If he's giving you more than you deserve, we have the Loch and Bamitzias, when you're Meshiva Veda, you don't have to take a Shavua. That's one of the rules. For Tikkun Olam, we don't want people who have to return a Veda to take Shavuot. Why? Because if they have to take a Shavua, they're not going to return a Vedot anymore, because they're not going to want to have to be subjected to harassment and having to take Shavuot. But if you're a modem mixat, if you do a partial admission requires you to take a shavua. So how do we view the case over here? In the case where the creditor is claiming five, the debtor is claiming three. How do we view the three that he's admitting to? He has a contract, but the contract says monies, plural. So we don't know which it is. Rabbi Yehuda claims it's kameshi vaveda. The additional money that he's giving him is all returning a lost object because he didn't have to say it. He could have said two, and we would have believed him. The fact that he says three, good luck. You got a little more money than you should have, than the contract states. So there we say, Meshiva Vida has to take no Shua. On the other hand, right, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar says it's a mode case of mode mixat. He says five, you say three, that's mode mixat. True. It's the minimum in the contract is monies. But in the end, he said three. If he says three, that's what he means. He means three, and he says five, you have a mode mixat case, you have to take a Shua. So, over here, Rabbi, the Gemara is saying, that Afilu de Rabbi Akiva, that who says in the case where he admits five and three, Hani Mili Eicha Deleke Edim. That's only a case where there's no Edim in the case. The case is we have a shtar, says money's in plural. We have a creditor saying five, a debtor saying three. In that case, Rabbi Akiva says whatever you get is a bonus. In our case, Rabbi Akiva will not agree. Why is it not a bonus over here? What do we have? We have a contract that says you owe the whole amount, right? And the debtor says I owe half, and the creditor says you owe the whole. So why don't we say that an edim come along, the edim come along and testify and say, listen, he paid the whole amount. So why don't we view his admission, the debtor's admission, as simply a Hashavas Aveda. In a case where the edim are saying he owes him nothing. So anything that he admits to is just basically a bonus to the creditor. The creditor got nothing. Had the debtor not spoken, creditor would have gotten zero. So now the debtor speaks up, it's all like a Meshiva Aveda. Why don't we just say, give him the half. By the way, this is probably what led the Rashbam to say who's taking the Shua here. Shua is by the debtor, because it's clear here, when we're talking about Shua, Modi Miksat. Shua Modi Miksat is from the debtor's side. Right? That is from the defendant's side, who's saying they only owe this amount. So the Gemara says no. Even Rabbi Kiva here agrees that you take a Shua. Why? Because what happened? He showed up in court, and he sees Edim that are coming to testify all of a sudden. Edim are coming to testify, he gets, oh my gosh, I don't know. If I say that I owe nothing, you know, what happens if the Edim say that I owe the whole amount? He's afraid. He doesn't know what the Edim are going to say, so he's a little scared. So he says, listen, I'll say half, so it won't look so bad. If they say I owe the whole amount, I said half, so I don't look so bad. If they say I owe nothing, all right, so you know what, it's not so bad in this case. So the reason that he's jumping the gun and admitting over here is because he's afraid of what the Edim are going to say. So in that case, you don't call him a Meshiva Veda. He's not of his own volition that he's admitting half. There's an external factor or force that's pushing him to say something. So in that case, we're not going to claim that he's a Meshiva Veda. Meshiva Veda is when you do something of your own volition. Voluntarily, you do it. Over here, he's no longer considered voluntary because there's a pressure that's being applied to him by the fact that he sees that there are Edim showing up. The fact that he sees Edim showing up already, we say, maybe this is not so voluntary. Now, Matzkin Flor, Amar Rav Ashi. Rav Ashi makes the claim the other way around. Adarabah, we could just say just the opposite. Why? Afilu Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, who says in that case, Moda Miksa, Tomer Moda Miksa, Tatana, Ave, Hanem, Ile, Echad, Elek, Eidim. That's in a case that are no Eidim to come as Sayle. That support his position. Ava, Echad, Eidim to come as Sayle, Vadim, Eshiva, Vedal. Right? Why can't you have it? Can't you say over here, in the case in Boba Metzia, he says five, the creditor says five, the debtor says three. That's it. It's just one word against the other word. The contract says they're both right. Why? Because it says monies. It says plural. So we have no edim to testify. Over here, you have a creditor saying whole amount. The debtor says half. And we have edim coming and say he paid the whole amount. Now, subsumed in the whole amount that the edim says is also the half that the debtor claims. So the debtor's got support for his position. So over here, it should not be classified as being a modim miksatz. It should be classified as being a complete mishiva veda. Whatever he said now is benefit to the creditor. I mean, the edim could have protected him on the whole amount. So now, Dorish Marzutra Mishmeid Rav Simi Barashi. So over here now, we have to deal with what the statement here, which is Hilchasa Bohani Shmaita Kedushalak Le Rav Avad Rav Yosef Bar Chamo, makes a global statement that everything that Rav Abi Ava said in all of these memorot that we saw all the way along, the Allah is like him. That's it. A complete statement all the way along that Allah is like him. Now the Gemara wants to know which one does it apply to. Because not in all the cases where Rabbi Abba spoke was he in a machlokas, number one. And number two is, do we really need Rabbi Abba in all these cases that tells the halachas this way? So that's what Gemara is going to try to, at this point, dissect what this statement means. Amalei Ravina the Ravashi. So Ravina says Ravashi, the Rav Nachman, my. Wait a minute. First of all, we have one problem. Let's start with this problem. The problem of Avadim. In the case of Avadim, we said that Rabbi Abba says, in Govim in Avadim. And Rav Nachman says, in Govim in Avadim. Rabbi Abba says you can collect a debt from the Yitomim out of Avadim because we're classified as real property. Rav Nachman says, no. We have a principle throughout Shas that halachic Rav Nachman medine. Whenever it comes to monetary or adjudication matters, the halacha is like Rav Nachman because he was a dayan, and therefore the halacha is like him, Rav Nachman. So now you have a problem. We're saying halacha is like Rabbi Abba here, the Govim in Avadim, and yet Rav Nachman says, in Govim. So now you have one case here where you're saying halacha is, one principle in halacha says everything's like Rabbi Abba, says halacha is like him, but another principle in halacha says halacha is like Rabbi Nachman. So what do we do? So he says, oh, that's not a problem. Amalei, ain Govim matnin in law. No. You quoted Rabbi, or Rabbi Abba here was quoted incorrectly. Rabbi Abba really said, ain Govim min Avadim, that you're not allowed to collect from the Avadim. And that's exactly what Rav Nachman says. So now you have them both on the same page. If Rav Nachman is saying you cannot collect that of slaves, and Rav Nachman and Rabbi Abba are both saying that you cannot collect that of slaves. So that solves that problem. Now we don't have a stira in the way that we pass in halacha, and that'll work fine. Okay, next case over here. When you say the halacha is like Rabbi Abba, what does that mean? What's the case that we're coming to speak about? If it's coming to tell you the halacha is like Rava, not like Rava, what did Rava do? Rava was in the case of the first cousins once removed. In the first cousins once removed, we said over there, Rabbi Abba says that a third generation can testify for a second generation. And along comes Rava and says, not only that, he can even testify for a first generation. So if you come to say the halacha is like Rabbi Abba, that is only a third to a second generation, but not a third to a first generation, says, how do you know that? Because midrava ilafuka midrava mosifu. He's just adding on something. He's adding on something to the Rabbi Abba statement. Meaning they're not mutually exclusive. Rabbi Abba could agree to the statement of Rava. Who says that Rabbi Abba disagrees with the statement of Rava? He could agree to it. Just because he said second generation to third generation is okay, doesn't mean that he believes third generation to first generation is not okay. That might have just been the case that they were discussing, and that's what he passed on. But that doesn't mean that he doesn't believe what Rava says. So that can't be why he comes to say halacha. Maybe he agrees to Rava in that case. What about Mar Bar Rav Ashi? Mar Bar Rav Ashi says that a grandfather to a grandchild can testify. So maybe that's what it's coming to exclude. The Gemara says, we already said that. It was explicit. Over here it says, Beleis Hilchusok Mar Bar Rav Ashi. You don't need the statement to say halacha to Rabbi Abba, because already when we quoted Mar Bar Rav Ashi, the Gemara already said, Leis Hilchasa. The halacha is not like Mar Bar Rav Ashi, so I don't need it for that. Alright, so what do I need it for? The next case? If it's going to exclude the opinion of Rav Sheshes, Shmuel, and Rav Papa, who all said that a blind person who saw the testimony when he was of clear vision, became blind, he can testify, according to Shmuel, about karka, according to Rav Papa, Rav Sheshes about a coat, and according to Rav Papa, even about metals. That already we know. Why? They were all itotuvu. Right? They were all questioned. The Brisa said they're wrong. He already says, Tuyufta, the Kulu Tuyufta. We said they're all questioned, all knocked off by the Brisa. They can't fit into the Brisa over here. So we know that the Halacha is not like them because they were already removed. So now what do I need Halacha Klarabba for? Ella, it must be, Ella Lafuke mid Rabbi Yochanan, Umidakafta Demar Rabashi. Must be when we come to say the Halacha is like Rabbi Abba, comes to teach us two dinim. One is that the Halacha is not like Rabbi Yochanan, meaning that the Halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda. When it comes to a father identifying the Bechor, even in a case where another child is Muchzak, the father is believed. Why? Because Rabbi Ava Paskin like Rabbi Yehuda, we saw in yesterday's daf, who says that he's believed that the father has and is empowered to identify the Bechor even in a case where there's another child that's Muchzak. And Rabbi Yochanan over here is holding like the Chachamim who say no. So that's the first thing. We've seen the Lachas like Rabbi Ava. The Lachas like Rabbi Ava to say that like Rabbi Ava and Rabbi Yehuda, and not like Rabbi Yochanan and the Rabbanan. That's one reason we need it for. And the second reason is for the next case. In the next case where we said about the Baal Chov, over there we said that a case where the creditor says you owe me everything, the debtor says I owe you half, and then we have Edim testifying that he knows him nothing. In that case we said he has to take a Shvu'ah, and he gets the other half. Whoever takes the Shvuah, probably the debtor, but according to Rabbi Gershom, the creditor takes the Shvuah and he collects the half that the debtor says he owes him. He collects that half from unencumbered property, from free and clear property. So over there we made a statement afterwards that even Rabbi Akiva agrees that over here you would take a Shvuah because it's not like Meshiva Veda. Why is it not like Meshiva Veda? Because they deem scare him into testifying. Then comes along Mar Bar Avashi and says, no, why don't you say it the other way around? Why don't you say, even according to Shimon Elazar, who says normally you take a Shvuah from Mother Miksat, over here it's like Meshiva Veda, because the Edim are supporting his position. If they're supporting his position, it's like he's giving them, you know, he's like he's giving in to them. He's just agreeing that anything he admits is Meshiva Veda, you shouldn't take a Shvuah at all. So that was the question of Mar Bar Avashi. So the Halacha being like Rabbi Abba comes to exclude from Mar Bar Avashi. The Halacha is Rabbi Abba, he has to take a Shvuah, and even Rabbi Akiva would admit that you have to take a Shvuah. And that's why we come to say Halacha like Rabbi Abba. And not like Mar Bar Avashi would say, don't take a Shvuah at all. Even according to Shimon Elazar, you should take no Shvuah in this case. So when we say, Halacha like Rabbi Abba, comes to teach us the Halacha like Rabbi Abba, that you take a Shvuah even in that case. Because again, other cases before where we had Rabbi Abba, there's one more case where we had Rabbi Abba. Right, the last case of Rabbi Abba we had was the case where it says, if you take a Shvuah, I'll give you the information. Over there we said the Halacha is like him, like Rabbi Abba, but there already was Machlokes Chachamim and Rabbi Meir. So the Halacha would have been like the Chachamim anyway. So if you say Hilchos of Rabbi Abba, you're not really adding anything because the Halacha is Gedivrei Chachamim. And we know that already, that the Halacha is like Divrei Chachamim. The only thing that Rabbi Abba over there is the dent of Frank Ross is where is the Machlokes between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim. Over there, you don't say Hilchos of Rabbi Abba, because Hilchos of Rabbi Abba already is right, telling you what the Psak Halacha is, not identifying what the case is. So again, Halacha of Rabbi Abba comes to teach us about these last two cases. The Halacha is like Rabbi Abba. Two out of those cases, right? The last two of them will be relevant that the Halacha is like Rabbi Abba in those two cases. Okay, we'll stop over here.